Salt truck, salt truck, it's a shame. Driving in the freezing rain.
Eleni Mandel singing the song Salt Truck, which seems to me to be a perfect way to lead into this program as we talk about road salt and its use, talk about how road salt makes slicker roads safer, but the long-term effects of salt in the environment isn't safe for wildlife or for us. Larry Mueller here, by the way, and here to talk about road salt. First, Allison Madison, the program manager for Wisconsin Saltwise. Allison, thank you for joining us.
It's great to be on air again, Larry.
Yeah, nice to have you back. Shannon Hayden is the stormwater runoff section manager in the Bureau of Watershed Management for the Wisconsin DNR. Shannon, great to see you.
Good morning.
Nice to have you both here. And as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in with your questions. Do you use salt to melt ice on your driveway or your walkway? Do you worry about the environmental impacts of road salt? Are there some alternatives to make streets and sidewalks safe in the winter? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could send an email to talk@WPR.org. Again, love to hear from you. Shannon, next week, by the way, January 27th, is Winter Salt Awareness Week. So this is pretty good timing. What about the use of road salt do you want the public to better understand?
I think using my Department of Natural Resources hat, I think it's important for folks to understand that we are seeing increases in chlorides from salt across our state. So it's one of the pollutants that we are seeing increases, and there is no way to kind of, there's nothing that will make it go away. There isn't a bug or a chemical or anything like that that can reduce that salt. So we're seeing it going up, and that's concerning for a variety of different reasons.
Yeah. So what does chloride do in the water when it hits the water?
Well, it does a lot of things. It's not good. We live in a freshwater environment, right? So we don't live in a place with ocean mammals and things like that. And so it will impact our fisheries. It makes our fish smaller. It can reduce the size of our fisheries, for example. It can also lead to some harmful algae blooms in the summer. Some of the interactions that we see with the chloride in our waterways can lead to some beach closures in the summer, which is obviously problematic when our summers are pretty short.
Yeah. And Allison, I've seen where chloride actually has quite a corrosive effect. I think I saw something in one of your sites or stories.
Yeah, I think, Larry, the average person like understands that all the salt we put down on our roads can do a lot of damage to our vehicles, but we might not connect that salt also prematurely ages our bridges and our roads, and even just, you know, sidewalks, buildings, doorways. So for every dollar that we spend on salt, we're doing about $10 of damage to our infrastructure. It adds up pretty quick, right?
Yeah, it does. I read somewhere about a bridge that collapsed in Canada that structurally, you know, it had rusted kind of away a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, that makes sense. And, I mean, hopefully we stay on top of it. We don't want the bridges collapsing, but it just means more dollars, right, kind of spent repairing and replacing those pieces of infrastructure more quickly.
Shannon, how does salt melt ice?
I'm going to kick that to Allison because she is our resident chemist and she does a really good job of explaining it.
Okay.
Yeah, happy to take that one on. So I guess if people can go back to high school chemistry, hopefully not too many nightmares ensue. Snow and ice is made up of water molecules. And those little water molecules, H2O, right? They like to hang out by one another. And when it's really cold, when it goes below 32 Fahrenheit, right, they kind of lock together, they bond together. And salt is used to break the bonds between those water molecules. So when you put salt down, most typically that's sodium chloride, the water molecules let go of one another because they're really interested in that salt. They're attracted chemically to those sodium and chloride components of the salt. And so those water molecules come and they give a big bear hug to the sodium, a big bear hug to the chloride. They just surround those individual parts of the salt. And that's what gets the water molecules to let go of one another. So the water molecules move away from one another. They melt. And what we make is salt water. So anytime we put salt down on our snow or on our ice, we're literally making salt brine.
Mark in Wisconsin Rapids has something for us. Let's go there for a minute. Mark, hi.
Hi, from the Dells, actually, Larry.
Oh, so, okay.
You're close. So I've got a bag of salt at home that I bought in 2006, and I've never used it because I discovered, because one of my farmer friends told me, just use barn lime. And, you know, I can take five or six handfuls of barn lime, which is cheaper than salt, and throw it on the ice between my house and the wood pile and walk right across it as if it was nothing more than sandpaper. It really works great. And it's a great alternative to, it doesn't melt the ice, but it's a great alternative to buying salt.
Well, Mark, thanks for calling. Allison, what do you think?
Mark, it sounds like a great solution that's working for you. I would say that in general, SaltWise wants to promote, you know, alternatives to salt because of all the salt we're seeing show up, you know, in our drinking water as well as lakes and streams. There are other materials, kind of like the barn lime, that people can use for traction. And if that is kind of like a level of service that's working, you're not slipping and falling, then I'd say great, keep it up.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And as long as we're at it, let's go to Craig, in, who's on Highway 12 in Dane County. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Larry. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask a couple questions about the brining that I'm seeing in Sauk County and other places where they use the liquid and dispense it from the rear of trucks. And my understanding is that is quite a bit more corrosive to the cars and the road and everything else than actual pellets of salt. And my one other comment was I got tired of using salt at home, so I bought the heat track heat pads for the areas, the walkway and the stairs, and those are wonderful.
Craig, thanks for calling. Well, let's go back to you, Allison. What about Brian?
Yeah,
on the other hand, Brian, to my understanding, is pretty good.
Yeah. So I want to first, I'll address the your latter point there about heated pavements.
Oh.
are awesome. Holland, Michigan actually has heated pavements in their town or in the city of Holland. I know the Madison Metropolitan Sewerage District is utilizing some waste heat from the wastewater treatment plant to melt snow and ice on some steps. So that's awesome. I'm glad, again, that that's working as an alternative. Brine is another alternative that I'm actually very much in support of. Traditional, or I should say kind of the most common salt brine that you're going to see used on roads is literally just rock salt mixed with water. So it's taking that rock salt and actually diluting it down. So it is chemically no more corrosive than regular rock salt. And the big win here is that as municipalities and counties, even contractors, are utilizing brine, salt brine, they're able to drop down their total salt application. So they're using less total salt, whether it's only in brine form or a mix of some brine with granular salt, but they're dropping down total salt use. And since salt itself is what is corrosive, and if we apply rock salt, it turns into brine, you know, when it melts that snow. If we're dropping down total salt, that means less total opportunity for corrosion.
That's pretty cool. Craig, thank you again for calling. Appreciate your call. Vern in Boyd, Wisconsin, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Vern.
Hi. So they're using magnesium chloride, which is very corrosive to aluminum, particularly aluminum wheels. They could use calcium chloride, actually. But after your brine, it's going to get into where you got the bridge beams where they fasten together with rivets. It's going to get in between them. And the vibration of what's causing the bridge failures, called threading corrosion.
Well, Allison, let me go back to you again here. We're sort of on the chemical side of things.
Yeah. So the last caller here just brought up two alternatives to sodium chloride, magnesium chloride and calcium chloride. So for those who, you know, don't have a degree in chemistry, I just ask you to think of they're all chlorides, right? They're all kind of cousins with one another. Sodium chloride is the cheapest, and it's just mined from the earth. We crush it up and put it down. Magnesium chloride and calcium chloride are both naturally found in a liquid form, and they're going to be more expensive to kind of process and to bring here into Wisconsin. So the cost of those alternatives is like 20 times as much as regular sodium chloride. So that's why we don't see them used all the time. They do have an added benefit for de-icing in that they work down to colder temperatures than regular sodium chloride does. So that's a big win. We've gone through some cold days here recently. And if you put rock salt down and it's 15 degrees, it's going to work so slowly that it's not really considered efficient or effective, because it'll probably blow or kind of move off the road before that melting can happen. So calcium chloride and magnesium chloride, they can actually have some other additional kind of environmental problems associated with them, kind of varies species to species. And I would say also calcium chloride can often do more damage to our metals, can be more corrosive. Magnesium chloride can be more damaging to concrete.
There you go. Thank you so much for that call. And Jim in Northern Illinois, we'll go to you. Hi, Jim.
Hello. I live on 27 acres. I'm 1,500 feet back off the road. I have a wood stove in my shop. And I have a 55-gallon barrel out in my pasture, not too far from the shop. I save my wood ashes, and spreading them out takes care of all the ice, and it doesn't freeze again overnight like it does with salt and stuff.
Jim, thanks for calling. Shannon, a comment.
I've heard some other folks do that, especially on their properties, getting out to their pastures and things like that. It is a fine reuse of that material. I'm not sure if we would be able to use it at a wide scale at a like municipal level, but I think that's a great way to have an alternative to salt and reuse something that you're having at your property already.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate the call. And Bruce in Altoona, we'll go to you. Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
So I'm a former public works director, retired, moved to Eau Claire a few years ago, and I went through the whole gamut in the Minneapolis area of going from sand salt to straight salt. And I just have to say, living in Altoona and Eau Claire, it's really frustrating to see the lack of awareness that our public works agencies seem to have. You know, the first storms that come out in a year, I look at the salt that they're putting down on the roads, and it's pretty clear they don't calibrate vehicles like they should. And I used to always tell my people that worked for me, plowing snow, that if you can see salt coming out the spinner of your back of your truck, you're putting out too much. And we put out a lot of brine there the last 10 years. In fact, the public works agency that I used to work for won an award to the Minnesota Freshwater Society on our reduction of the amount of salt that we put down. And it's frustrating for me to come to Wisconsin and see all the sand salt that gets put down. Sand really doesn't do much of anything as far as traction on the road. It's like throwing marbles down. And the bad part about sand salt is you have to pick it up in the spring.
Yeah. Bruce, thanks a lot for calling. Get some comments from Shannon. Do you want to start, or Allison?
I can start really
Shannon,
quickly.
Go ahead.
I mean, I really appreciate that point of view, and I think we're working hard. The work that Allison is doing, and as much as we can with our communities that have permits to discharge their stormwater to waters of the state, we've been working with those communities in Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls and Altoona. All of them are permitted for their stormwater discharges, and so hearing some of that feedback is something I can take back to our folks that work closely with them. And, you know, the more we can talk about it and get the information out, about overusing salt, the better. So I would love it if they connected with their local officials maybe and kind of shared their experience. Perhaps they can learn something.
Yeah.
I would jump in and say I know personally some folks from the city of Eau Claire, their Department of Public Works, and they really have done a lot in the last several years to calibration was mentioned. So calibrating equipment for the average person, it kind of means knowing how much salt is going down per lane mile. And then newer vehicles have ground speed control where you can actually kind of dial it up or down. So as the vehicle slows down, the salt application rate also slows down. And then, you know, if your vehicle stopped, the plow or the, you know, the salter isn't releasing salt, right? You don't see that pile at the intersection. So I know the city of Eau Claire has really done a lot and also made some pretty big investments into brine as, again, part of that suite of solutions to bring down total salt use. But I think municipalities so often feel the pressure from residents to do more and to get down to bare pavement kind of like immediately to be salting continuously throughout the storm. And so it's, I think, really important as residents to kind of recognize and slow down. And if you don't need to be on the road, you know, during a snow event, stay home when possible and share if this is something, you know, that is a concern to you, let your municipalities know that you'd prefer to see them, you know, lighten up.
Yeah. And Shannon, you were telling me that in Texas, they were telling people to stay home.
Stay home for like 2 or 3 days. Just wait it out. Yes.
Wait it out. Oh, boy. Talking with Shannon Hayden, the Stormwater Runoff Section Manager in the Bureau of Watershed Management with our DNR. Allison Madison is the Program Manager for Wisconsin Salt Wise. You can join in with your questions or comments, maybe your experiences. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We're talking today about the use of road salt on the streets and roads and sidewalks of Wisconsin today with our two guests, Shannon Hayden of the Wisconsin DNR. She's the Stormwater Runoff Section Manager. And Allison Madison's Program Manager for Wisconsin Salt Wise, and great to have them along, and you can join in too at 800-642-1234, email to talk@wpr.org. Allison, you're the, you know, we should clarify a little. You're the Program Manager for Wisconsin Salt Wise. Tell us about that organization.
Yeah, so Wisconsin Salt Wise started in the Madison area with folks from the city of Madison, Dane County, the wastewater treatment plant, the water utility, all saying, we've got a problem here, right? They were looking at data showing sodium and chloride levels increasing in our local drinking water, as well as lakes and streams. And so they kind of came together and started bringing in folks from Minnesota. Actually, Minnesota just came up earlier on the show. Yeah, from people from Minnesota to talk about, you know, best practices and host more training events, started some outreach campaigns. And then I was hired in 2020 to kind of grow this work. So I've been connecting with others across the state and actually in recent years across the country that are doing similar work, trying to bring down salt use by the use of these industry best practices.
Joel in Waupun had called, couldn't stay with us. He's seen the use of pink industrial beet juice in use in Fond du Lac County. Curious, what are the advantages and disadvantages of beet juice as an alternative to salt? And I think that actually started in Madison, if I'm not mistaken. So.
Yeah, so a lot of this, Allison, I'm going to jump right in here. A lot of municipalities have played around a little bit with sugars, sometimes from beet juice, sometimes from molasses, different agricultural byproducts. And sugars themselves don't melt ice and snow, but when you add a little bit of sugar, sometimes it's maybe 5-10% sugar into a brine solution, you slow down the ability for that material to refreeze once it's applied. And that's huge, right? As plow operators maybe put some material de-icer down and then they do their route, they come back a couple hours later, they want that material to be pliable and be able to scrape it off. So sugars can slow down the rate of refreeze. They also reduce corrosion. I know the topic of corrosion came up earlier. Sugars, though, do end up in our water, just like, you know, all the other components of the salt do. So that is a concern. We don't want to, you know, just apply anything at high rates. Whatever tool we're using, we really want to just apply it as needed.
And, you know, how much salt do we use in a year on our roads in Wisconsin? Do we have an idea of that?
Yeah, so it does vary, you know, winter to winter. Last winter was pretty light, but typically we see about 500,000 tons of salt go down on our state roads and interstates. And then when we, you know, start looking at what's going down on municipal roads and trying to estimate what's going down on parking lots and sidewalks, we're putting down roughly between 1 to 2 million tons of salt a year. It's a lot of salt.
That's a lot of salt, especially when I read somewhere that 1 teaspoon of salt is all it, if you add it to 5 gallons of water, that 5 gallons of water from that teaspoon of salt is now toxic to organisms.
Yeah, to our freshwater organisms.
So, and we're talking about 1 million tons.
Yes. We're not on a sustainable trajectory here, Larry. I don't know, how to put it. I think in the last several decades, we've just really ramped up salt use. We've become overly reliant on this one chemical de-icer. You know, it's one tool in our toolkit to fight snow and ice. We didn't always use it. You know, if we were always putting salt down at these rates, we wouldn't be drinking our water. But we've only started putting salt down since the 1960s, 1970s. And then the rates at which we've, you know, used salt have just skyrocketed since then.
Yeah. Robert in Menominee has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Robert.
Yes, good morning, Larry. Enjoying the show, and you're kind of right in my wheelhouse today. I'm retired from the Wisconsin DOT, and we talked on this topic for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. It's important for people to realize, I think, first, that the Wisconsin DOT doesn't own a single snowplow. We contract with counties. They provide the equipment, and they provide the crews to do this, and they do an outstanding job of keeping all 72 counties, the state highway system, free of snow and ice. And there's a tremendous amount of coordination, cooperation between the DOT and counties. This is a partnership that goes back 100 years or more to do these things. And you guys have talked about brining. It's important. And we're trying to find this balance between keeping our roads safe, keeping them open, and at the same time, you know, the commerce moving. People get to their appointments, but we got to also be mindful of not using any more salt than is absolutely necessary. You're always trying to find just the right balance here. And so, again, there's a lot of cutting-edge technologies, methods. They do the brining. They do it a lot of times before storms, where they'll put it on bridge decks, put it on curbs, places that tend to be problem areas. And again, the goal is to break the bond between pavement, snow, and ice so that plows can get out there later. They're the workhorses. They're the steel blades on the roads moving the snow and ice. So again, the key thing I think people need to understand is there's an effort to make consistency between counties. You always hear about people going, well, it's different in that county. Well, again, there's tremendous efforts. There's guidelines that are set as to how much salt to use, when to get roads clear after a storm. Tremendous effort there. And so, again, we're trying to pool technologies with other states and trying to find ways to keep our roads safe, keep them open, while reaching our common goal here of not using any more salt than is necessary. But
yeah. Robert, thanks. Shannon, a comment from you.
Yeah, you can hear the passion in
Robert's
voice,
great,
right?
To hear
and
that
I
passion.
Think that I think it is important to acknowledge the work that our DOT has put into reducing their salt use. They are seeing reductions and really trying to fine tune that level of service, maintaining safety. And you could hear it in Robert's commentary. And I think that all the folks that are out there clearing our roads feel the same way. They want to do the right thing and keep people safe and also, you know, protect our environment at the same time.
And Robert mentioned, you know, the amount and so forth. Jay and O'Connell had emailed to ask, are there regulations on how much salt is too much? In O'Connell, Jay says that so much salt is applied to the streets, they're white with it. And Jay says they have seen vehicles kicking up clouds of salt dust. That can't be good for anyone breathing that dust in, even, Jay says.
There are no regulations about how much salt you put down.
Yeah. And I would say that there is, you know, work to have consistency county to county. The DOT does recommend kind of what their level of service, you know, requirements or expectations are, but there's still a lot of variability. And we see this county to county, municipality to municipality, in terms of the technologies that they have and the education and the training. And I really see my work as trying to, you know, help accelerate the adoption of these best practices, get more municipalities and counties to talk with one another. And, because we have some agencies that have dropped their salt use by 30, 40, even 50% in the last several years. And that's kind of like an average per lane mile based on weather severity or winter weather severity. So it's like if we see people that are really that are making these significant reductions without reducing level of service, like if an agency hasn't, it's like there's some low-hanging fruit there.
Yeah, absolutely. John in Menominee, Michigan has something for us. Hi, John.
Yes. Hello, Larry. Glad to be with you.
Well, go ahead.
I was remarking and wondering about the use of calcium magnesium acetate as a ice melter on the Mackinac Bridge. If you're familiar with that, it's four lanes, and the two outside lanes are paved, but the inside lanes are grates, and of course, they're not going to be putting salt down on there for two reasons. A, it's going to corrode the steel that makes up the grates, and B, it falls right through the grates into the Straits of Mackinac. So I believe they use calcium magnesium acetate to alleviate those problems.
Hmm. Well, Allison, let me turn to you for that.
Yeah, so calcium magnesium acetate is often abbreviated as CMA, and that is a non-chloride alternative for de-icing. We see non-chlorides like CMA, sometimes potassium formate, potassium acetate, used also at airports where, you know, we don't want our planes rusting out. Boeing has enough problems as it is. So, if our infrastructure is, you know, really valuable to us, then we don't use salt. I mean, I think that's kind of the bottom line there.
And calcium magnesium acetate or CMA would be more expensive.
Yes. You're much more expensive.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, like 25 times more expensive. So the DOT doesn't necessarily have the budget to use CMA down our roads.
But it's interesting. John, thanks a lot. Appreciate that information on what's going on there on the Mackinac Bridge. Mark in Bowler, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hello, Larry and guests. I want to point out something that we have not covered yet, I don't think, is that people expect the roads to be in as drivable condition after a snowstorm as they are when it's normally dry. And people don't, I don't know what's wrong with people these days. They all want to go 60, 65, and you can't do that when it's snowing the roads. They got to get up a little earlier or leave a little earlier and drive a little slower. That's the real problem here.
Well, Shannon, let me turn to you for a minute for that.
I think changing people's behavior would absolutely go a long way in reducing or changing expectations of the traveling public and reducing the amount of salt that we use. So I fully support paying attention to the weather the night before and getting up earlier. And I think it would be nice if we could have some larger messaging around that to help people be reminded of slowing down and giving themselves more time.
Yeah, I think that the pressure from the public is just as the
that's why we have so much road salt use as we do.
Yeah, and it's really hard to kind of push back against that. We've really coddled people, and there's kind of zero desire to get up earlier and drive slower. Also, you know, really to consider your tires and your tire tread putting on snow tires. The whole kind of responsibility goes on to the agencies, you know, the plow operators, and then they really, a lot of them take it personally, you know, and I mean, it's hard for them if there's an accident on their route, right? And so what are you going to do next time? Well, just, you know, go heavier with the salt. And there's no question there about, well, what was the responsibility of the driver in this? You know, we do have accidents and even slip and falls, right? In summer months, there are still times where people fall on sidewalks. Is it always because, you know, there was a lack of salt? I'd say no.
Rick, on the road near Plover, Wisconsin, on to you now. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, this is Rick. Calling in regards, I'm a truck driver, and I can drive various states, Montana, North Dakota, Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan, whatever. Wisconsin has some of the best snow plowing crews out there and some of the worst. You go to Washer County, probably not the best. You go over by Oshkosh, probably not the best. Portage County does a really good job. Wood County's iffy depending on what township you're in. Minnesota, you get into Minnesota, especially at an inch of snow, chances are you're going to end up seeing 50 cars in a ditch. North Dakota, they don't do anything. I've been in nights where it took me an entire day to go from the west side of North Dakota to one city, seeing multiple traffic accidents during ice storms. Our job is to move freight. We need those salt. We need that salt. We need them plow operators. You'll see out here on an average day, a snow plow will start plowing right before the storm, and then you probably won't see a snowplow in some areas until after the storm is done. Other places do such a good job, you can do your job. I don't care about the environment. I care about getting the job done safely.
Yeah. Well, Rick, I think you have an opinion that's close to a lot of people's opinion in many ways.
I would say Rick sees a lot of things out on his day-to-day, so I can appreciate his point of view.
Well, one of the things that struck me as Rick was talking that is a lot of snow, all snow removal, almost all of it, is local.
Yeah, and I think also, I mean, he's talking about that variability county to county,
that's
right?
That's what I meant.
So Wisconsin is the only state that contracts out its snow removal. So, like, Minnesota DOT, you know, is maintaining, right, the entirety of their state interstate network. But in Wisconsin, though, you know, driving 94 or, you know, pick a road, right, you cross a county line, there's a different agency in charge of that that road. So there is variability. I think we're trying to, as the one caller worked for the DOT said, you know, there are regional DOT kind of networks to support counties, but there still is a lot of variability. And then there's some of that is on purpose, right? Like 94 is going to be maintained at a different kind of level of service than, you know, a county road, right?
Yeah. And 94 is a long road. It's a long road. And the weather, you get up around Minneapolis and then, you know, go back 50 miles.
Yeah.
And the weather there, the snow there and so forth is going to be a lot heavier than it is just outside of Madison, typically.
Yeah. A lot of variability. And there's the typical and then the atypical, right? You get closer to Milwaukee and you've got that kind of lake effect or lake enhanced snow. So I would bring up, though, this is some kind of cool technology that we're seeing some counties, municipalities use our road weather stations. So the DOT has had those for a while, but they haven't always been able to share that information with kind of more local agencies. And so some agencies are buying their own kind of mini weather stations so that they have on-site information about their road condition as well as the pavement temperature and then projections for what's happening. Because pavement temperature is really what drives, you know, that melting or not,
sure,
right, on the road surface. So, you know, air temperature is one thing, but when you're trying to melt snow on, you know, the road, you want to know pavement temperature because it drives the rate of melting as well as the melting capacity of the salt that we put down.
Yeah, and I was thinking when you have a lack of snow, like we have in many parts of southern Wisconsin, and then we have temperatures that are below zero, that's going to chill down that, I would assume, is going to chill down that those roads.
Yep.
And that makes it harder?
Yes. Yep.
Makes it harder.
Yeah, it works less efficiently as the pavement temperature drops.
Yeah. With salt, what is it? 15 degrees?
Usually people say about 15 Fahrenheit is when we want to switch away from regular rock salt and either have a de-icer with some calcium or magnesium chloride in it, which is going to cost more, right, and be more corrosive, or switching, you know, to sand for traction or some of those earlier callers, you know, talked about some other things that they have at their homes.
Our guests today, Shannon Hayden and Allison Madison with us. Shannon is the stormwater runoff section manager for the DNR. Allison is the program manager for Wisconsin Salt Wise. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking about the use of road salt on our streets and roads today with Shannon Hayden of the DNR and Allison Madison, of Wisconsin Salt Wise. Great to have them with us. Shannon, I want to turn to you for just a minute as we talk about thinking about water, drinking water as an example. I mean, we've got some issues or potential issues with salt, too much salt, and our water supply.
Yeah, I think it's important to bring this to folks' attention. This is kind of one of the first times we've really looked at our groundwater data in this way. We were kind of wondering, like, what is the state of sodium in our drinking water? And many of our members of public in Wisconsin get water from a well, primarily even in the city you're getting well water, a municipal well. And in looking at the data since 2004, 39% of our community wells have tested at least one time, exceeding the 20 milligrams per liter that's recommended by the public health professionals for people on a low-salt diet. So individuals with high blood pressure, maybe they don't even know they have high blood pressure, aren't paying attention. They may be getting excess salt just from drinking their water every day and not accounting for that. And so I think that was something that was kind of surprising when we started looking at that data, working with my colleagues over in drinking and groundwater to start to really understand what's going on in our wells across the state. And that was something that we hadn't necessarily been focusing on until we recently started kind of pulling that data out.
We just talked about wells yesterday on the program, as a matter of fact, and testing wells. So there you go. I do want to make clear that you are not advocating for the elimination of salt in roads. Right, Allison?
Correct, yeah. Wisconsin Salt Wise is about being wise, being smart about our salt use. And we see so many municipalities, contractors, counties that have cut their salt use by 30 to 50% through the adoption of best practices, by really bumping up mechanical removal. So we're talking about, you know, better plow blades, more plowing, less salting. And then when using salt, you know, using it in that brine form as much as possible, or mixing that brine with granular. So those things that are, you know, they're cutting salt use by 50% without reducing level of service. So we're still keeping our roads safe, pavement safe, but just not overusing salt. So it's pretty basic.
Stella in Sturgeon Bay has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Stella.
Hi. I was just thinking about it. I remember as growing up in Wisconsin, in Madison, seeing salt trucks all the time spraying salt out the back of the truck. I haven't seen one of those in years. And we live in Door County. We're surrounded by water, and it, throughout the county, brining is used. See, before a storm, the roads are brined, and I've never seen a salt truck up here. And I just wondered if I could please, for modifying behavior, in if people are use a technique called back casting, which means you know the time that you need to arrive somewhere, look at weather conditions, figure out what a safe speed to drive is, and then work backwards and figure out what time, how much time you need in advance in order to arrive at your time, at your destination on time.
Stella, thanks a lot. Backcasting. I've heard
it's
of that.
It's a good methodology to be prepared for what's to come.
Yeah, yeah. Or you can get a backlash. Of which I've had more than one in my life as a fisher person, fisher guy. So Door County is pretty good in terms of its use of brine and so forth.
It sounds like it. Yeah. I mean, that application of brine before the storm, as the listener, kind of caller who worked for the DOT mentioned, it's really effective when it's able to be used. Can't use it all the time. By applying the brine before the storm, you prevent the bond from forming between snow and the pavement. So it's kind of like putting a little bit of oil on a skillet when you're going to cook some food, right?
Yeah.
You forget to do that, you might be scraping and scraping afterwards, right? But a little bit of, you know, cooking spray before you put the food down, spatula comes, food comes off. So it really increases mechanical removal efficiency and effectiveness.
Jim in Minnesota, we'll go to you next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, afternoon. Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I got to make this quick, but I just want to say, you know, I've been doing this. I also work for a municipality in Minnesota, and speaking as an operator, I don't want to speak for the agency, but I can tell you that I'm sure they agree with what I'm going to say. But, you know, I've been doing this for over 27 years now, and we've come full circle. You know, we used to run all the with a plow truck with, 10% salt and 90% sand. And we went full circle to 100% salt. And now we're even going to liquid only on a lot of our trucks. But what really, and I've heard a lot of discussion on best practices, and I agree with 100%. But I'll be honest with you, the weather hasn't, I mean, the amount of snow that we've gotten over the years has changed. But it doesn't. It's not rocket science. You know, it gets slippery. We got to make it not slippery. What really drives our application of materials is the public, the people and the equipment driving up and down the highways. You know, we are very proactive trying to get out there and put material down, like she was just saying, as far as to, you know, prevent that bond from happening in the first place. And then using mechanical means to remove the snow, because you'll never be able to put enough salt down to melt the snow, but you're going to mechanically remove it, and then at the end of the event, try to get bare pavement.
Yeah. Jim, thank you very much for calling. Comment, Shannon?
I think it just reiterates a lot of what we've been saying, and again, that passion that our operators are out there doing and really care about what they do and making sure people are safe, but also managing that salt use. Like, you could hear it again here.
Yeah. And I think I would add in, too, I mean, there's, unfortunately, we see some pretty big differences in practices between roads, where this operator is saying, you know, salt is just to kind of break that bond, right? And then you plow, you're moving it, versus looking at parking lots, where sometimes we see there's no plow going by, right? They're just salting and salting and salting over and over. And so many parking lots that I've seen recently are just pure white with all the salt that's gone down this winter. And again, I think on that side, what we see, it's really that fear of liability, maybe lack of information if equipment isn't calibrated or, you know, operators aren't trained. But I think the fear of liability is huge. And last session, we brought in some legislation to try to tackle that, modeled after something that New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services has done to provide limited liability protection to contractors that are trained in best practices, calibrate their equipment. So we're looking at trying to bring that legislation forward again. But yeah, there's just so many aspects to this, right? And so much to know. If I can put a little plug in for people to learn a little bit more, to educate others, to check out Wisconsin Saltwise, wisaltwise.com. We had mentioned earlier that Winter Salt Week is coming up next week. So wintersaltweek.org is the website, and there are free webinars all week where people can learn from experts talking about, you know, the damage of salt pollution in our waterways. We also have people from Public Works talking about, you know, their agency's wins and successes, people from the East Coast all the way out to, you know, through Minnesota. We don't have people out west. There is still kind of less salt used there. But there is a lot of good happening. I think it's just in continuing to raise awareness so more people understand the impacts of salt and why we really want to just use it as needed.
Yeah, I think that's very good advice for people to take a look to your website, because there's a lot there. I think we have a link on our show today as well. To get people to the website. Vicki in Mount Horeb has something for us. Vicki, hi.
Hello. My question is more for homeowner, you know, not the large scale that you've been talking about. But is the PetSafe, and I'm going to use the term salt because I'm not sure what it is. I don't have it in front of me. But the PetSafe products that you can buy, are they better for the environment? And are they truly PetSafe?
Yeah. Interesting. Shannon, you know?
Maybe.
Depends on which one, huh?
Well, there are no labeling standards for any of the salt products. There was a movement trying to kind of get some national standards so consumers could understand what exactly they are buying. So it's really hard. Do your research to see if, you know, what is in it. It will inform, you know, whether or not it may have some, you know, reduction in problems for your pets. But generally speaking, for the most part, no.
A lot of misinformation out there. There's no truth in labeling. They can say whatever they want on the package, good for your pet, good for, you know, the environment. You want to look at what the ingredients are. So sometimes a product might be labeled pet safe because they've taken the kind of jagged, you know, salt crystal and they've rounded it so that your pet, it won't jab your pet in the paw. That doesn't chemically make it any safer or less damaging. You want to look at what the ingredients are. So sodium chloride tends to be the number one ingredient, even in these products that are labeled pet safe. They might have a little bit of magnesium or calcium chloride in them so that you can use them at lower rates. Usually if something says like it's environmentally safer, it's only safer if you use less of it. So kind of be like someone, you know, handing you a salt shaker and saying this salt is healthier for you. Well, it's only healthier if you put half a shake of salt, you know, on your french fries. So don't overuse any of those products, or we're not getting any benefit from them. So we actually worked with the EPA, and they're ending their Safer Choice program for de-icers because it was very it was just misinforming consumers.
And as we're on the consumers, like this morning, we had a little snow in Wisconsin, in Madison, and I went out with my leaf blower and quickly blew it off. And I use I've got a little snow plow, my own kind of, that I use to keep my driveway clear. So I don't use salt at all.
Yeah, it's great, right? Those little tools are like a little broom. We're seeing more brooms on, like, you know, tool cats, right? That just kind of sweep down on sidewalks or bike paths. And a lot of counties are actually getting plow blades that have rubber in them. So it's like a carbide cutting edge and then rubber behind it, which is almost like a squeegee down the road. And then that's really allowing them to drop their salt use. So the more that we can move that snow mechanically, the less salt is needed.
Well, on that note, boy, it's been an interesting hour for sure. And lots of participation here from people. And I want to thank you both for being with us. I'm sorry we didn't get to all the emails and calls that are still waiting, Shannon and Allison. But thank you both very much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having
us. This is great. If they want to kind of continue this conversation, I'm happy to take emails at wisaltwise@gmail.com.
wisaltwise@gmail.com. Allison, Shannon, thank you both very much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. Shannon Hayden's with the DNR, Allison Madison, Program Manager for Wisconsin Saltwise. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Snowflake showers, I want roads that I can drive.